The sleepy bookshelf should have something for everyone. If we are missing your favourite story, you can vote for future books on our website, sleepybookshelf.com. Good evening, and welcome to the Sleepy Bookshelf, where we put down our worries from the day and pick up a good book. I'm your host, Elizabeth. Thank you for being with me tonight. This evening we are returning to Emma. But before that, let's take a moment to relax and get ready for sleep. Concentrate on how your body feels and where you are holding any tension. Take a big stretch and allow those areas to fully relax and sink into your bed. Now take some nice, deep breaths. Inhale and collect all your thoughts and concerns from the day. And exhale, letting them all go. Once more, inhale and exhale. Lovely. Previously, Emma was trying to steer her conversation with Harriet away from Mr. Elton by stopping to visit Mrs. and Miss Bates on their way home from their walk. She rarely liked to do this in case she bumped into anyone undesirable, and because she hated hearing Miss Bates read aloud her latest correspondence from her niece, Jane Fairfax. The latter was a near miss, because Jane was all Miss Bates wanted to talk of, given her niece's imminent visit to Highbury. Jane was Miss Bates's sister's orphan, who had been adopted by her father's military comrade, Colonel Campbell. She had grown up in wealth and opulence, educated to a high degree, with the view of eventually becoming a teacher to support herself. Emma did not know why she disliked her so much, and on meeting her again for the first time in 2 years, found her in fact very elegant. However, after spending the evening with her at Hartfield, she remembered how cold and closed off Jane was. She wouldn't even give away any information of Mr. Frank Churchill, whom it was known she was loosely acquainted with. And that is where we pick up tonight, with Mr. Knightley about to applaud Emma's civility towards Miss Fairfax. So, just lie back and relax as I turn to the next pages of Emma. Volume 2, Chapter 3. Emma could not forgive her, but as neither provocation nor resentment were discerned by Mr. Knightley, who had been of the party and had seen only proper attention and pleasing behaviour on each side, he was expressing the next morning, being at Hartfield again on business with Mr. Woodhouse, his approbation of the whole. Not so openly as he might have done had her father been out of the room, but speaking plain enough to be very intelligible to Emma. He had been used to think her unjust to Jane, and now had great pleasure in marking an improvement.
"A very pleasant evening,"
he began as soon as Mr. Woodhouse had been talked into what was necessary, told that he understood, and the papers swept away.
"Particularly pleasant. You and Miss Fairfax gave us some very good music. I do not know a more luxurious state, sir, than sitting at one's ease to be entertained a whole evening by two such young women, sometimes with music and sometimes with conversation. I'm sure Miss Fairfax must have found the evening pleasant, Emma. You left nothing undone. I was glad you made her play so much, for having no instrument at her grandmother's must have been a real indulgence."
"I'm happy you approved," said Emma, smiling. "But I hope I'm not often deficient in what is due to guests at Hartfield."
"No, my dear," said her father insistently. "That I am sure you are not. There is nobody half so attentive and civil as you are. If anything, you were too attentive. The muffin last night, if it had been handed round once, I think it would have been enough."
"No," said Mr. Knightley, nearly at the same time. "You're not often deficient. Not often deficient in either manner or comprehension. I think you understand me, therefore."
An arch look expressed. "I understand you well enough." But she said only, "Miss Fairfax is reserved."
"I always told you she was a little. But she will soon overcome all that part of her reserve which ought to be overcome, or that has its foundation in diffidence. What arises from discretion must be honoured."
"You think her diffident? I do not see it."
"My dear Emma," he said, moving from his chair to one close by her, "you are not going to tell me, I hope, that you had not a pleasant evening."
"Oh no. I was pleased with my own perseverance in asking questions, and amused to think how little information I obtained."
"I'm disappointed," was his only answer.
"I hope everybody had a pleasant evening," said Mr. Woodhouse in his quiet way. "I had. Once I felt the fire rather too much, but then I moved my chair back a little, a very little, and it did not disturb me. Miss Bates was very chatty and good-humoured, as she always is, though she speaks rather too quick. However, she is very agreeable, and Mrs. Bates too, in a different way. I like old friends. And Miss Jane Fairfax is a very pretty sort of young lady. A very pretty and a very well-behaved young lady indeed. She must have found the evening agreeable, Mr. Knightley, because she had Emma."
"True, sir. And Emma, because she had Miss Fairfax."
Emma saw his anxiety, and wishing to appease it at least for the present, said, and with a sincerity which no one could question, "She is a sort of elegant creature that one cannot keep one's eyes from. I'm always watching her to admire, and I do pity her from my heart." Mr. Knightley looked as if he were more gratified than he cared to express, and before he could make any reply, Mr. Woodhouse, whose thoughts were on the Bateses, said,
"It is a great pity that their circumstances should be so confined. Great pity indeed. And I have often wished, but it is so little one can venture to do, small, trifling presents, if anything uncommon. Now we have killed a porker, and Emma thinks of sending them a loin or a leg. It is very small and delicate. Hartfield pork is not like any other pork, but it is still pork. And my dear Emma, unless one could be sure of their making it into steaks, nicely fried as ours are fried, without the smallest grease, and not roast it, for no stomach can bear roast pork, I think we had better send the leg. Do you not think so, my dear?"
"My dear Papa, I sent the whole hind quarter. I knew you would wish it. There will be the leg to be salted, you know, which is so very nice, and the loin to be dressed directly in any manner they like.
That's right, my dear. Very right. I had not thought of it before, but that is the best way. They must not oversalt the leg. And then, if it is not oversalted, and if it is very thoroughly boiled, just as Serla boils ours, and eaten very moderately off, with a boiled turnip and a little carrot or parsnip, I do not consider it unwholesome.
Emma, said Mr. Knightley presently, I have a piece of news for you. You like news, and I heard an article in my way hither that I think will interest you.
News? Oh, yes, I always like news. What is it? Why do you smile so? Where did you hear it? At Randall's?
He had time only to say, No, not at Randall's. I have not been near Randall's. When the door was thrown open, and Miss Bates and Miss Fairfax walked into the room. Full of thanks and full of news, Miss Bates knew not which to give quickest. Mr. Knightley soon saw that he had lost his moment, and that not another syllable of communication could rest with him.
Oh, my dear sir, how are you this morning? My dear Miss Woodhouse, I come quite overpowered. Such a beautiful hind quarter of pork. You are too bountiful. Have you heard the news? Mr. Elton is going to be married.
Emma had not time even to think of Mr. Elton, and she was so completely surprised that she could not avoid a little start and a little blush at the sound.
There is my news. I thought it would interest you, said Mr. Knightley with a smile which implied a conviction of some part of what had passed between them.
But where could you hear it?
Asked Miss Bates.
Where could you possibly hear it, Mr. Knightley? For it is not 5 minutes since I received Mrs. Cole's note. No, it cannot be more than 5, or at least 10, for I had got my bonnet and Spencer on, just ready to come out. I was only gone down to speak to Patty again about the pork. Jane was standing in the passage. Were you not, Jane? For my mother was so afraid that we had not any salting pan large enough. So I said I would go down and see, and Jane said, Shall I go down instead? For I think you have a little cold, and Patty has been washing the kitchen. Oh, my dear, said I. Well, and just then came the note. A Miss Hawkins, that's all I know, a Miss Hawkins of Bath. But, Mr. Knightley, how could you possibly have heard it? For the very moment Mr. Cole told Mrs. Cole of it, she sat down and wrote to me. A Miss Hawkins.
Well, I was with Mr. Cole on business 1.5 hours ago. He had just read Elton's letter as I was shown in and handed it to me directly.
Well, that is quite... I suppose there never was a piece of news more generally interesting. My dear sir, you really are too bountiful. My mother desires her very best compliments and regards, and 1,000 thanks, and says you really quite oppress her.
We consider our Hartfield pork, replied Mr. Woodhouse. Indeed, it certainly is so very superior to all other pork, that Emma and I cannot have a greater pleasure than...
Oh, my dear sir, as my mother says, our friends are only too good to us. If ever there were people who, without having great wealth themselves, had everything they could wish for, I am sure it is us. We may well say our lot is cast in a goodly heritage. Well, Mr. Knightley, and so you actually saw the letter. Well?
It was short, merely to announce, but cheerful, exulting, of course.
Here was a sly glance at Emma.
He had been so fortunate as to, I forget the precise words. One has no business to remember them. The information was, as you state, that he was going to be married to a Miss Hawkins. By his style, I should imagine it just settled.
"Mr. Elton is going to be married," said Emma as soon as she could speak. "He will have everybody's wishes for his happiness."
"He's very young to settle,"
was Mr. Woodhouse's observation.
"He had better not be in a hurry. He seemed to me very well off as he was. We were always glad to see him at Hartfield."
"A new neighbour for us all, Miss Woodhouse," said Miss Bates, joyfully. "My mother is so pleased. She says she cannot bear to have the poor old vicarage without a mistress. This is great news indeed. Jane, you have never seen Mr. Elton. No wonder that you have such a curiosity to see him."
Jane's curiosity did not appear of that absorbing nature as wholly to occupy her.
"No, I have never seen Mr. Elton," she replied, starting on this appeal. Is he a tall man?" "Who shall answer that question?" said Emma. "My father would say yes, Mr. Knightley no, and Miss Bates and I that he is just the happy medium. When you have been here a little longer, Miss Fairfax, you will understand that Mr. Elton is the standard of perfection in Highbury, both in person and mind."
"Very true, Miss Woodhouse, so she will. He is the very best young man. But, my dear Jane, if you remember, I told you yesterday he was precisely the height of Mr. Perry. Miss Hawkins, I dare say, an excellent young woman. His extreme attention to my mother, wanting her to sit in the vicarage pew that she might hear the better, for my mother is a little deaf, you know. It is not much, but she does not hear quite quick. Jane says that the Colonel Campbell is a little deaf. He fancied bathing might be good for it. The warm bath. But she says it did him no lasting benefit. Colonel Campbell, you know, is quite our angel. And Mr. Dixon seems a very charming young man. Quite worthy of him. It is such a happiness when good people get together. And they always do. Now, here will be Mr. Elton and Miss Hawkins, and there are the Coles, such very good people, and the Perrys. I suppose there were never a happier or better couple than Mr. and Mrs. Perry. I say, sir," turning to Mr. Woodhouse, "I think there are few places with such society as Highbury. I always say we are quite blessed in our neighbours. My dear sir, if there is one thing my mother loves better than another, it is pork. A roast loin of pork. As to who or what Miss Hawkins is, or how long he has been acquainted with her," said Emma, "nothing, I suppose, can be known. One feels that it cannot be a very long acquaintance. He has been gone only 4 weeks."
Nobody had any information to give. And after a few more wanderings, Emma said,
"You are silent, Miss Fairfax, but I hope you mean to take an interest in this news, you who have been hearing and seeing so much of late on these subjects, who must have been so deep in the business on Miss Campbell's account. We shall not excuse your being indifferent about Mr. Elton and Miss Hawkins." "When I have seen Mr. Elton," replied Jane, "I dare say I shall be interested, but I believe it requires that with me. And as it is some months since Miss Campbell married, the impression may be a little worn off."
"Yes, he has been gone just 4 weeks, as you observe, Miss Woodhouse," said Miss Bates. 4 weeks yesterday. A Miss Hawkins. Well, I had always rather fancied it would be some young lady hereabouts. Not that I ever... Mrs. Cole once whispered to me, but I immediately said, 'No, Mr. Elton is a most worthy young man.' But in short, I do not think I am particularly quick at those sorts of discoveries. I do not pretend to it. What is before me, I see. At the same time, nobody could wonder if Mr. Elton should have aspired. Miss Woodhouse lets me chatter on so good-humouredly. She knows I would not offend for the world. How does Miss Smith do? She seems quite recovered now. Have you heard from Mrs. John Knightley lately? Oh, those dear little children. Jane, do you know I always fancy Mr. Dixon like Mr. John Knightley? I mean in person. Tall and with that sort of look, and not very talkative.
Quite wrong, my dear aunt. There is no likeness at all.
Very odd. But one never does form just an idea of anybody beforehand. One takes up a notion and runs away with it. Mr. Dixon, you say, is not, strictly speaking, handsome.
Handsome? Oh no, far from it. Certainly plain. I told you he was plain.
My dear, you said that Miss Campbell would not allow him to be plain, and that you yourself...
Oh, as for me, my judgment is worth nothing. Where I have a regard, I always think a person well-looking. But I gave what I believed the general opinion when I called him plain.
Well, my dear Jane, I believe we must be running away. The weather does not look well, and Grandmama will be uneasy. You are too obliging, my dear Miss Woodhouse, but we really must take leave. This has been a most agreeable piece of news indeed. I shall just go round by Mrs. Cole's, but I shall not stop 3 minutes, and Jane, you had better go home directly. I would not have you out in a shower. I think she is better for Highbury already. Thank you, we do indeed. I shall not attempt calling on Mrs. Goddard, for I really do not think she cares for anything but boiled pork. When we dress the leg, it will be another thing. Good morning to you, my dear sir. Oh, Mr. Knightley is coming too. Well, that is so very... I'm sure if Jane is tired, you will be so kind as to give her your arm. Mr. Elton and Miss Hawkins. Oh, good morning to you.
Emma, alone with her father, and half her attention wanted by him while he lamented that young people would be in such a hurry to marry, and to marry strangers too, and the other half she could give to her own view of the subject. It was to herself an amusing and a very welcome piece of news, as proving that Mr. Elton could not have suffered long. She was sorry for Harriet. Harriet must feel it, and all that she could hope was, by giving the first information herself, to save her from hearing it abruptly from others. It was now about the time that she was likely to call, if she were to meet Miss Bates in her way, and upon its beginning to rain, Emma was obliged to expect that the weather would be detaining her at Mrs. Goddard's, and that the intelligence would undoubtedly rush upon her without preparation. The shower was heavy, but short, and it had not been over 5 minutes when in came Harriet, with just the heated, agitated look which hurrying thither with a full heart was likely to give, and the, "Oh, Miss Woodhouse, what do you think has happened?" which instantly burst forth, had all the evidence of corresponding perturbation. As the blow was given, Emma felt that she could not now shew greater kindness than in listening, and Harriet, unchecked, ran eagerly through what she had to tell. She had set out from Mrs. Goddard's half an hour ago. She had been afraid it would rain. She had been afraid it would pour down every moment, but she thought she might get to Hartfield first. She had hurried on as fast as possible. But then, as she was passing by the house where a young woman was making up a gown for her, she thought she would just step in and see how it went on. And though she did not seem to stay half a moment there, soon after she came out, it began to rain. She did not know what to do, so she ran on directly, as fast as she could, and took shelter at Ford's. Ford's was the principal woolen draper, linen draper, and haberdasher's shop united, the first shop in size and fashion in the place. And so there she had sat, without an idea of anything in the world, full 10 minutes perhaps, when all of a sudden who should come in. To be sure, it was so very odd, but they always dealt at Ford's. Who should come in but Elizabeth Martin and her brother?
Dear Miss Woodhouse, only think, I thought I should have fainted. I did not know what to do. I was sitting near the door. Elizabeth saw me directly, but he did not. He was busy with the umbrella. I'm sure he saw me, but she looked away directly and took no notice, and they both went quite to the farther end of the shop. And I kept sitting near the door. Oh dear, it was so miserable. I'm sure I must have been as white as my gown. I could not go away, you know, because of the rain. But I did so wish myself anywhere in the world but there. Oh dear, Miss Woodhouse. Well, at last, I fancy, he looked round and saw me. For instead of going on with her buyings, they began whispering to one another. I'm sure they were talking of me, and I could not help thinking that he was persuading her to speak to me. Do you think he was, Miss Woodhouse? For presently she came forward, came quite up to me and asked me how I did, and seemed ready to shake hands if I would. She did not do it in the same way that she used. I could see that she was altered. But, however, she seemed to try to be friendly, and we shook hands and stood talking some time. But I know no more what I said. I was in such a tremble. I remember she said she was sorry we never met now, which I thought almost too kind. Dear Miss Woodhouse, I was absolutely miserable. By that time, it was beginning to hold up, and I was determined that nothing should stop me from getting away. And then, only think, I found he was coming towards me too. Slowly, you know, as if he did not quite know what to do. And so he came and spoke, and I answered, and I stood for a minute, feeling dreadfully, you know, one can't tell how. And then I took courage and said it did not rain and I must go. And so off I set. I had not got 3 yards from the door when he came after me, only to say if I was going to Hartfield, he thought I had much better go round by Mr. Cole's stables, for I should find the near way quite floated by this rain. Oh dear. I thought it would be the death of me. So I said I was very much obliged to him. You know, I could not do less. And then he went back to Elizabeth, and I came round by the stables. I believe I did. But I hardly knew where I was, or anything about it. Oh, Miss Woodhouse, I would rather done anything than have it happened. And yet, you know, there was a sort of satisfaction in seeing him behave so pleasantly and so kind. And Elizabeth, too. Oh, Miss Woodhouse, do talk to me and make me feel comfortable again.
Very sincerely did Emma wish to do so, but it was not immediately in her power. She was obliged to stop and think. She was not thoroughly comfortable herself.
The young man's conduct and his sister's seemed the result of real feeling, and she could not but pity them. As Harriet described it, there had been an interesting mixture of wounded affection and genuine delicacy in their behaviour, but she had believed them to be well-meaning, worthy people before. And what difference did this make in the evils of the connection? It was folly to be disturbed by it. Of course he must be sorry to lose her. They must be all sorry. Ambition as well as love had probably been mortified. They might all have hoped to rise by Harriet's acquaintance. And besides, what was the value of Harriet's description? So easily pleased, so little discerning. What signified her praise? She exerted herself and did try to make her comfortable by considering all that had passed as a mere trifle, quite unworthy of being dwelt on. "It might be distressing for the moment," said she, "but she seems to have behaved extremely well, and it is over. And may never, or can never, as a first meeting occur again. And therefore you need not think about it." Harriet said, "Very true," and she would not think about it. But still she talked of it. Still she could talk of nothing else. And Emma, at last, in order to put the Martins out of her head, was obliged to hurry on the news, which she had meant to give with so much tender caution, hardly knowing herself whether to rejoice or be angry, ashamed or only amused at such a state of mind in poor Harriet. Such a conclusion of Mr. Elton's importance with her. Mr. Elton's rights, however, gradually revived, though she did not feel the first intelligence as she might have done the day before, or an hour before. Its interest soon increased, and before their first conversation was over, she had talked herself into all the sensations of curiosity, wonder and regret, pain and pleasure, as to this fortunate Miss Hawkins, which could conduce to place the Martins under proper subordination in her fancy. Emma learned to be rather glad that there had been such a meeting. It had been serviceable in deadening the first shock without retaining any influence to alarm. As Harriet now lived, the Martins could not get at her without seeking her, where, hitherto, they had wanted either the courage or the condescension to seek her. For since her refusal of the brother, the sisters never had been at Mrs. Goddard's, and the 12-month might pass without their being thrown together again, without any necessity or even any power of speech. Volume 2, Chapter 4. Human nature is so well disposed towards those who are in interesting situations that a young person who either marries or dies is sure of being kindly spoken of. A week had not passed since Miss Hawkins' name was first mentioned in Highbury, before she was, by some means or other, discovered to have every recommendation of person and mind to be handsome, elegant, highly accomplished, and perfectly amiable. And when Mr. Elton himself arrived to triumph in his happy prospects and circulate the fame of her merits, there was very little more for him to do than to tell her Christian name and say whose music she principally played. Mr. Elton returned a very happy man. He had gone away, rejected and mortified, disappointed in a very sanguine hope,
after a series of what appeared to him strong encouragement, not only losing the right lady, but finding himself debased to the level of a very wrong one. He had gone away, deeply offended. He came back, engaged to another, and to another as superior, of course, to the first, as under such circumstances, what is gained always is to what is lost. He came back gay and self-satisfied, eager and busy, caring nothing for Miss Woodhouse and defying Miss Smith. The charming Augusta Hawkins, in addition to all the usual advantages of perfect beauty and merit, was in possession of an independent fortune of so many thousands as would always be called ten, to a point of some dignity, as well as some convenience. The story told well. He had not thrown himself away. He had gained a woman of £10,000 or thereabouts, and he had gained her with such delightful rapidity. The first honour of introduction had been so very soon followed by distinguishing notice. The history which he had given to Miss Cole of the rise and progress of the affair was so glorious, the steps so quick from the accidental rencontre to the dinner at Mr. Green's and the party at Mrs. Brown's. Smiles and blushes rising in importance, with consciousness and agitation richly scattered. The lady had been so easily impressed, so sweetly disposed, had in short, to use a most intelligible phrase, been so very ready to have him, that vanity and prudence were equally contented. He had caught both substance and shadow, both fortune and affection, and was just the happy man he ought to be, talking only of himself and his own concerns, expecting to be congratulated, ready to be laughed at, and with cordial, fearless smiles, now addressing all the young ladies of the place, to whom a few weeks ago he would have been more cautiously gallant. The wedding was no distant event, as the parties had only themselves to please, and nothing but the necessary preparations to wait for. And when he set out for Bath again, there was a general expectation which a certain glance of Mrs. Cole's did not seem to contradict, that when he next entered Highbury, he would bring his bride. During his present short stay, Emma had barely seen him, but just enough to feel that the first meeting was over and to give her the impression of his not being improved by the mixture of pique and pretension now spread over his air. She was, in fact, beginning very much to wonder that she had ever thought him pleasing at all, and his sight was so inseparably connected with some very disagreeable feelings, that except in moral light as a penance, a lesson, a source of profitable humiliation to her own mind, she would have been thankful to be assured of never seeing him again. She wished him very well, but he gave her pain, and his welfare 20 miles off would administer most satisfaction. The pain of his continued residence in Highbury, however, must certainly be lessened by his marriage. Many vain solicitudes would be prevented, many awkwardnesses smoothed by it. A Mrs. Elton would be an excuse for any change of intercourse. Former intimacy might sink without remark. It would be almost beginning their life of civility again.
Of the lady individually, Emma thought very little. She was good enough for Mr. Elton, no doubt. Accomplished enough for Highbury. Handsome enough to look plain, probably, by Harriet's side. As to connection, there Emma was perfectly easy. Persuaded that, after all his own vaunted claims and disdain of Harriet, he had done nothing. On that article, truth seemed attainable. What she was must be uncertain, but who she was might be found out, and setting aside the £10,000, it did not appear that she was at all Harriet's superior. She brought no name, no blood, no alliance. Miss Hawkins was the youngest of the two daughters of a Bristol merchant, of course he must be called. But as the whole of the profits of his mercantile life appeared so very moderate, it was not unfair to guess the dignity of his line of trade had been very moderate also. Part of every winter she had been used to spend in Bath, but Bristol was her home. The very heart of Bristol. For though the father and mother had died some years ago, an uncle remained, in the law line. Nothing more distinctly honourable was hazarded of him than he was in the law line, and with him the daughter had lived. Emma guessed him to be the drudge of some attorney, and too stupid to rise, and all the grandeur of the connection seemed dependent on the elder sister, who was very well married, to a gentleman in a great way near Bristol, who kept two carriages. That was the wind-up of the history. That was the glory of Miss Hawkins. Could she but have given Harriet her feelings about it all? She had talked her into love. But alas, she was not so easily to be talked out of it. The charm of an object to occupy the many vacancies of Harriet's mind was not to be talked away. He might be superseded by another. He certainly would, indeed. Nothing could be clearer. Even a Robert Martin would have been sufficient, but nothing else she feared would cure her. Harriet was one of those who, having once begun, would always be in love. And now, poor girl, she was considerably worse from this reappearance of Mr. Elton. She was always having a glimpse of him somewhere or other. Emma saw him only once, but two or three times a day Harriet was sure just to meet with him, or just to miss him, just to hear his voice, or see his shoulder, just to have something occur to preserve him in her fancy, in all the favouring warmth of surprise and conjecture. She was, moreover, perpetually hearing about him, for excepting when at Hartfield, she was always among those who saw no fault in Mr. Elton, and found nothing so interesting as the discussion of his concerns. And every report, therefore, every guess, all that had already occurred, all that might occur in the arrangement of his affairs, comprehending income, servants and furniture, was continually in agitation around her. Her regard was receiving strength by invariable praise of him, and her regrets kept alive. And the feelings, irritated by ceaseless repetitions of Miss Hawkins' happiness and continual observation of how much he seemed attached. His air as he walked by the house, the very sitting of his hat, being all in proof of how much he was in love. Had it been allowable entertainment, had therefore been no pain to her friend, or reproach to herself in the waverings of Harriet's mind, Emma would have been amused by its variations.
Sometimes Mr. Elton predominated, sometimes the Martins, and each was occasionally useful as a check to the other. Mr. Elton's engagement had been the cure of the agitation of meeting Mr. Martin. The unhappiness produced by the knowledge of that engagement had been a little put aside by Miss Elizabeth Martin's calling at Mrs. Goddard's a few days afterwards. Harriet had not been at home, but a note had been prepared and left for her, written in the very style to touch, a small mixture of reproach with a great deal of kindness. Until Mr. Elton himself appeared, she'd been very much occupied by it, continually pondering over what could be done in return and wishing to do more than she dared to confess. But Mr. Elton, in person, had driven away all such cares. While he stayed, the Martins were forgotten, and on the very morning of his setting off for Bath again, Emma, to dissipate some of the distress it occasioned, judged it best for her to return Elizabeth Martin's visit. How that visit was to be acknowledged, what would be necessary, and what might be safest, had been a point of some doubtful consideration. Absolute neglect of the mother and sisters when invited to come would be ingratitude. It must not be. And yet the danger of a renewal of the acquaintance. After much thinking, she could determine on nothing better than Harriet's returning the visit, but in a way that, if they had understanding, should convince them that it was only to be a formal acquaintance. She meant to take her in the carriage, leave her at the Abbey Mill, while she drove a little farther, and call for her again so soon as to allow no time for insidious applications or dangerous recurrences to the past, and give the most decided proof of what degree of intimacy was chosen for the future. She could think of nothing better, and though there was something in it which her own heart could not approve, something of ingratitude merely glossed over, it must be done. Or what would become of Harriet?